Ninitipuyan My Cry tracks the journey of Innu poet, actress, and activist Natasha Kanapi-Fontaine. To heal the wound of racism, Natasha reappropriates her Innu language, and the words help rediscover her roots and empowers the need for self-determination as much for herself as for all Indigenous people. Ninitipuyan My Cry starts January 24 at Cinéma du Parc.
To kick off Black History Month, the Black Student Network of McGill, BSN, will be taking over CKUT to host Black Talk.
Black Talk is 12 hours of Afrocentric special programming that aims to highlight Black achievements at McGill and how the history of prejudice towards Black people informs contemporary Black struggles.
Black Talk is a space for Black healing where we speak freely on issues that matter to us.
Be prepared to be woke, but also have a good laugh and listen to some great music. Tune in Friday, January 31st, from 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. to catch that.
No access without consent. Help support the Wet'suwet'en people fight against RCMP occupation on Gidimtan territory. A benefit taking place at Casa del Popolo on two nights. Monday, January 27th, performances are by Jessica Moss and Terry Amar, Matt Ball and Kai Brooks, Alex Moskus, and Mauro Pizente and Chris Vargas. Then on Friday, February 7th, also at Casa del Popolo, performances by Hua Li, Akwash, and Black Casper. Solidarité avec Gidimtan. Suggested donation is $20. No one will be turned away for lack of funds.
The unmistakable sound of LP. Live, Saturday, May 23rd. Place Belle. LP. Tickets on sale now at evenco.ca.
For the first time in North America, Aya Nakamura with her greatest success, Jaja. Her album Nakamura has sold over 750,000 copies, the most listened to French female artist in the world. Her videos get more than a billion views. Don't miss Aya Nakamura, Thursday, April 9th at Place Belle. Tickets go on sale this Friday at 10 a.m. on evenco.ca.
So, Phil Niblock, you've been writing. New work for organ. You are well known as a drone music composer, but then you got this commission from acoustic organist. Wanted him to write a work for organ. Can you talk about that work?
That was a commission from the Musica Festival in Strasbourg, France. But we recorded in the cathedral in Mons, Belgium, with this incredible organist, Hampus Lindvall, who's actually from Stockholm, but he lived in Paris for about 15 years. Now he's living in Brussels. So we're sort of collaborating. And he also was a friend of this label who wanted to issue the record. And so it's out. We actually recorded the material to play in the concert on September 23rd. The concert was September 26th. And the record was out by after Christmas.
Wow, it's his fast.
So it was very, very fast getting it done. So
I heard this work, Phil Niblock, is a little bit different from what we are used to hear from you.
It's even a little bit different than I would have done it myself, but that's the way it goes. The guy is actually a very aggressive musician, so he played much more than I would have played. I would have made it much more spare than that. So. But he was working from a score, not anything else. Oh, that's it. Good.
What was surprising about the way he interpreted the score for you?
Oh, how can we say this? He made it very complex. He kept entering new notes where normally you enter a one-minute period, one-minute bar length, and you play one thing. And you next one, you play something else. And next one, so you change what you're doing. But he was changing every 15 seconds or 10 seconds or something like that. So he kept adding a lot of stuff, which is was not really the nature of the beast for me. But on the other hand, it makes it a very exciting piece because a lot's happening. So
yeah, it's like in some classical music when there's the composer leaves some space for the interpret to improvise or to create something out of the piece.
Yeah, but I don't do that. In fact, I had a concert recently, December 21st, the roulette concert, which is 6 hours long. And there was a violinist who wanted to play, so he came and played for him two different pieces. And evidently we had never rehearsed. And so he simply improvised over the pieces, which was really horrible. And what I said to him at the end, I mean, you're not supposed to do that. He was shocked. Misnomer. I assumed that we had played together before, and he had not ever really, we had not sat down and played a piece, so he knew what he should be doing.
But this organ piece had very good reviews, and people really like what this collaboration produced.
Yes, but that's the way it goes. So, I mean, the piece was less me, but the reviews are very good. There's three other reviews which are ecstatic.
Awesome.
Printed ones. So.
And so this record contains this new piece, but also an older piece that you've been writing for organ too. So this record, this LP or album presents two pieces, right?
For organs, the first piece I ever did was for an organ in 1968 at Judson Church, because it was the organ of Judson Church. And so it was played there.
For Meredith Monk.
No, it wasn't for Meredith Monk. No, she played essentially my score of the piece. So at the beginning of the concert, she's sitting at the organ playing as the audience comes in about time for the concert to start. She gets up and walks down and sits down in the seat, but the organ continues to play my recording. So it was a recorded. In fact, I'm just renovating the speakers that I used in that performance, which I built in like 65 or something. So.
Oh, these are the famous speakers that Eliane Radig mentioned in some texts. When
no.
She, no?
These are not famous speakers. Believe me. But that's another issue.
Yeah.
Anyway, then I made another piece for organ, for a very spare Baroque organ in Austria, with a very nice organ player from Vienna, who wasn't even mentioned in that review. Really bad. Now I can never send it to him. And so Hampus wanted to play a live part with that. The organ piece has been used quite a few times where another organist plays a live part with that recorded track in Cologne and places like that. So
Phil Niblock, this is your new record for organ. Can you present... There's two pieces on that record. Can you please present us these two pieces, and we will listen to
small and gray on gray.
Gray on gray, really? So it's mysterious. Okay. And that's also a kind of palindrome of something.
I haven't remembered what at least one of them is, which is unmounted.
Yeah.
And then / muted noun.
Yeah.
The muted noun is an anagram of unmounted.
Is the music, the composition, is related to the anagram process, or it doesn't have anything?
No relationship to anything.
Okay. Well, how did you compose it?
The title has no relationship to it.
And how did you proceed to compose that piece, Phil Niblock?
Okay, now I make pieces in two ways, essentially. One is to go with the musician to a studio and to record a series of tones, like monotones, of the material that I want to work with in the piece. It has something to do with perhaps the instrument that I'm recording. Most of those pieces are a single instrument piece, like flute or cello, for instance. So then I have this material and I come back to my studio and I work in a multi-track environment in the computer, and I build up the piece. I take elements of that stuff that I recorded. I edit it first so that I know exactly what number is which thing. And I just draw it into this multi-track thing and construct the piece. So it can have as many as, say, 32 tracks. So 32 sounds at the same time. But then I make pieces in a way so that they can be played by many different musicians, and they're scored. So there's actually a score that you read as you read a normal score for a piece. And they're played by people who look at the score and they play what they think they should play. But there's a lot of microtones written into it. So they have to play not like an A440, but they have to play an A like 447 or something. And they have to know about what that is.
How can they do that? Do they have like...
Good musicians can do that.
Yeah.
They understand how sharpness and flash.
But you don't like give them earphone with the frequency or something like that?
In the very beginning, yes, the first pieces which turned into be orchestra pieces were that way, where the musicians were tuned by tape, and so they play what they heard on the tape. So, but then that's impossible to do with an orchestra. There's one piece, it's recorded with 110 musicians. That's a little bit difficult to do with headphones without any.
And what about this piece for organ? So the score was basically giving this type of instructions to the performer?
Yeah, there's every... a bar length is usually 1 minute. So they play something for 1 minute and they switch to something else for a minute. And normally there's only one note shown there. So the guy who's playing all of those notes on this recording is simply manufacturing material.
So this first piece, is the one where the organist, the performer is performing a lot of notes, or it's the second
piece?
Yeah.
Very much so. It's sort of overlay.
So for 1 minute, he had 1 minute to make these chords, but then he decided to make ornamentations on the microtonality,
well,
if I can say that.
Well, he doesn't really pay attention to the score. He's just playing notes.
But he followed the score.
Well, theoretically, but we don't really know because he's playing so many notes we can't tell what he's playing.
Well, this is the fun to work with the performer. He can interpret, and somebody else, another performer, would do something completely different. And every time it would be different.
Well, another performer who was, who I paid more attention to what he was doing, I would say, don't do that. And then he would have to contract somewhat what he did. But we never really talked about it. And he recorded the piece, and there it goes. He recorded the piece sitting, up in the organ bench. And I was sitting way down in the audience, so I was 200 feet away from him.
You could not do anything.
I couldn't really do anything.
You were like a poor victim.
I was a little bit.
But still, people liked it.
The organ sounded really great.
People liked that, which is interesting, because when you do scored music, you never know how it will end up. People may play it in 100 years, and maybe your ghost will come and haunt them, but I really doubt it.
That's sort of not... I mean, the idea of the score is to give them something fairly exact to play, so if they're not trying to improvise something with your score, then they're not playing it the way they should be.
So yeah. Let's listen to that piece, which is
Unmounted Muted Noun.
Thank you. Thank you, Phil, and luck.
Thank you.
And now we're back for the second piece. So that was this great piece for organ that Avina commissioned.
Unmounted.
Yeah.
But just leave it at unmounted, that's good enough.
And the second piece is?
Nagra.
And that was a commission too?
There was not a commission. It was a piece for a solo instrument.
Any kind of instrument?
No, for an organ.
For an organ. Okay.
We started with this organist to record. We went to a church, a great church, in near Krems, Austria, called Wagram. And he found, he knows a lot of organs. So we found a Baroque organ, which was very simple, compared to the organ, for instance, where we recorded, in the cathedral where we recorded Hampus Lindvall. It was a very simple organ and very clean sounding, made with a clean sounding piece.
What is the difference between the previous piece and that piece that we will hear?
In this recording, Hampus plays a live part with the recorded part. And I have to listen to it myself more carefully to find out how much more he added, I mean, how loud he is in comparison to the original recorded part or not. I suspect that he's quite overpowering to the original score.
How was broadcast in space this pre-recorded part? Is it on four channels, on four speakers, eight speakers?
Now we're talking about the performance that we heard was of unmounted.
Yeah.
And it's a piece written to have four recorded parts and one live part. And so he pre-recorded all the pre-recorded parts.
Okay.
And we played those back in the church where we were with a fairly large sound system. For me, they made a mistake in two ways. One, we did a sound check in the afternoon with no audience. And in fact, the audience was relatively huge. There were maybe 400 people, 500 people, something like that. And they were so absorptive that the recorded sound was not loud enough because they absorbed so much of the sound. And so I should have jumped up and went over and said, and I didn't do it. So I let it go. Also, they put the speakers rather close in the middle instead of having the speakers at the ends of the church. They were, the audience was sort of corralled in this between speakers, but it was a very small space. So they really crammed in fact, sitting on the floor. And so they just made a barrier. They made a sound barrier that
I
the
see.
Piece didn't quite overcome.
And what about the second piece? So because you're still talking about the first piece now, right?
Still talking about
the first piece. Yeah, and what about the second piece? What is the difference in terms of processus compositionnel, compositional processes? Are they were they built in a similar way, or what is the difference in the way they were conceived?
For one thing, they were, as I said, constructed in completely different ways.
Yeah.
So in the second piece, Nagra, those pieces are frequently played without a live performer. They are sound pieces by themselves, and the sound is coming from loudspeakers. And so we've done it a number of times, actually, with different organ players playing a live part versus the tape. And for the most part, they listened pretty much to what was on the tape, so they recorded, they made fairly spare sounds. So I make music very much to come from loudspeakers. I mean, I'm really got caught in the hi-fi revolution of 1950, so that I'm really interested in this sound that's produced by loudspeakers more than I am by acoustic instruments. So that frequently in a concert, I will play a full concert, like a two-hour concert, by just playing back recordings. I don't do anything, and nobody else does anything. There's
yeah, no this live, is the way we're no used to see you performing, yeah.
Yeah. And classically, that's what happened also in the 50s and 60s when people were playing concrete music. They played tapes, and then the audience got bored. So I made it a little bit better. I showed films for people to look at while I'm playing the tapes. But the sound that I'm really interested in is what comes out of the loudspeaker. And so if there is a live player, and frequently there are live players, they are attuned to play pretty much what they hear and not an excess of that. And they're not so loud. They're not a soloist against a tape background. They should blend into the sound of the recorded material. So
the second piece is basically a piece where there was no live performance.
No, there was a live performance.
Okay, there was
a live performance. Hampus is playing live with the tape that was recorded quite some years ago. 2007, that's not too long for me, but that's for some people, that's quite a long time ago.
So what is the name of this older piece for organ that we can hear on that album?
It's called Nagro, which is organ spelled backwards.
And Nagro?
And not Negro, please.
No. Well, we know you really love jazz music, but... Yeah, it's not an homage to...
This is almost Martin Luther King Day.
You mean about what?
Well, he said not Negro, but it's a good day to speak about.
Today?
Negro. Yesterday was Martin Luther
King. Yesterday was, exactly, yeah. So, yeah, that's an interesting point. Can you talk about the influence, maybe the influence of jazz in your music? You listen to a lot of... jazz, some Afro-American music.
It's funny because this question was asked exactly that way in Strasbourg. There was an interview of me with Yvonne Etienne and Joachim Matassouis, and I was the subject. And Yvonne asked that question, and my answer was none.
I was expecting you to say that answer. That's the reason I've been very careful asking you that question, Phil Niblock. Talk about
and
that.
I thought that probably wasn't true, because Ellington is all about sound, and that's really where it is, essentially. Yeah, so.
Yeah, textures and the structure of the sound.
Yeah.
Yeah, the way sounds are combined to make structures.
The way you used the orchestra was really to produce sound, which is... And I just realized in my new private sound systems, I have not played any Ellington. And I've discovered two today that I will play. So, you gotta go now?
Yeah, we'll get some food and we'll get back after we listen to the piece. And meanwhile, we will eat Phil LeBlanc and Katrin Liborowska.
Yeah. We'll play that.
Thank you. Yeah.
This is that.
Thank you, Phil LeBlanc. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your attention.
Thank you for your music.